Welcome to Exploration 1, Module 3, for Semester 2. Alrighty, so I want to make a bit of a start on this binary stuff this morning so that we can at least start getting used to how binary operates and stuff. Who's had experience with binary before?
A little bit.
Alrighty, so everybody... Okay, so we can all tolerate a little bit of revision here. Okay, now, it's probably worth mentioning that our regular number system is base 10, because you've got 10 fingers, I think, is probably the primary reason. Well, you've got 8 fingers and 2 thumbs, but let's just pretend they're 10 fingers for this exercise. So, our base 10 numbering system uses the symbols from 0 to 9 to represent numeric data, okay? 1 potato, 2 potato, 3 potato, 4... I can't remember the rest of the song, but you get the idea. Now, when you get to 9, to get to the next number, we have a special name for it, which is 10. However, it's actually written as 10, which means one lot of 10 plus 0 lots of 1. Yeah, that's right. One lot of 10 plus 0 lots of 1. Just doubting myself there. When we go to 11, we've got one lot of 10 plus one lot of 1. When we get to 17, we've got one lot of 10 plus 7 lots of 1. Does that make sense to anybody in any way, shape, or form?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so if we take the number 123, we've got one lot of 3... We've got two lots of 10, and we've got one lot of 100. So we've got one lot of 100, two lots of 10, and three lots of 1 is 123.
Okay. Makes sense. Okay. Yep.
Well, yeah. I mean, I can write some of this out in chat, but that's a big number, but that's as big as we're going to get. But you've got lots of hundreds, you've got lots of tens, you've got lots of ones. We call the units above that thousands. We call them 10,000s, 100,000s, millions, billions, trillions, etc. Like, everybody's cool with that terminology. I used to have a friend of mine when she was 4 that used to make herself angry by pretending that the announcer on the radio was saying, "You win 10,000 cents," which was quite odd, but it got her angry. But you guys get the idea that we've got special names for this stuff in our number system, like hundreds, tens, thousands, 10,000s, etc. The next spanner I'm going to throw into the works is everybody aware that anything raised to the power 0 equals 1? And I don't really want to mathematically prove it, but I can.
Yeah, I was aware.
Yeah, I'll All take right. your word
so
for
how
it.
This... take your word for...
Well, in brief terms, if you say 2 to the power of 3 is 8... just as an example, okay? So see, if you say 2 to the power of 3 divided by 2 to the power of 3, to do a division of powers, you subtract the indices, so 3 minus 3 is 0. 8 divided by 8 is 1, therefore 2 to the power of 0 is 1. That's probably about all I want to say on the issue, but that's why it works.
I accept it as truth.
Alright, we can come back to it if it really confuses people, but the point I want to make here is that when you were dealing with base 10, 10 to the power of 0 is 1, alright? So 6 can actually be written as 6 times 10 to the power of 0. 4 can be written as 4 times 10 to the power of 0. So what you end up with when you look at our numbers is you have... we're only dealing with whole numbers here to keep things simple. You end up with the right-hand column, which is the 1's column, being 10 to the power of zeros. You've got a 10's column, which is 10 to the power of 1's. You've got a 100's column, which is 10 to the power of 2. And you've got a 1,000's column, which is 10 to the power of 3. So if you've got no life, you can write 3,250 as 3 times 10 to the power of 3 plus 2 times 10 to the power of 2 plus 5 times 10 to the power of 1 plus 0 times 10 to the power of 0. You really do have to have no life, but this is one way of representing our number system. Is everybody... I'm not going to test you guys with this on base 10, but it does become important when we get down to base 2. But does everybody vaguely understand how that fits together without breaking out the Cuisenaire rods?
Yes.
Could be.
Yes. It sounds kind of what I remember of octal, sort of.
Yeah, it's... You... It's power theory, and it's log theory, and... I don't know whether anybody remembers, but back in the bad old days, if you wanted to multiply two big numbers together, you would actually find the logs of them, add the logs together, and then do an anti-log of the result, and that would give you what the two numbers multiplied were. We don't do that anymore. Luckily, we've got calculators, but has anybody ever heard of that? Like the parents talking about it or something?
No, but I heard they used to have to look up the sine, cosine, tan in a book.
Sorry, Barry, you're really quiet, I'm afraid. Your microphone seems to have been minced again. Alright. So, we'll come back to this if we need to, but with base 10, we have special names for our base raised to the particular power, and our base is 10. Oh, it is. That's amazing. Now, what did you want to say? I couldn't catch you the first time, I'm afraid.
No, all I was saying was I don't remember folks talking about logs, but I do remember them saying that you used to have to look sine, cosine, tan up in a book.
That's right. And there were actually logarithm books. I actually saw one with my exam in year 10. They actually had a log book, and I was probably one of the three people who knew how to use it. But that's neither here nor there. Alright, so we know that if we want to write the numbers in base 10, we can write them out as lots of 1s, lots of 10s, lots of 100s, lots of 1000s, lots of 10,000s, lots of 100,000s, all that sort of stuff. And those can also be written as 10 to the power of 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We're going to get to this more specifically in binary itself, and it's going to be easier because we're not going to have this multiplication thing going on. Alright, so if you have... we all know that ones and zeros... Computers use binary, and binary is ones and zeros. We at least know that much?
Yeah.
Something we know, yeah.
Yep, got that.
Look, I do intend to go back and fill in all the gaps here, guys, but what I sort of want to do is confound you a little bit and then come back and undo some of that confounding. That's the theory. Okay, has anybody here heard the Inchworm song? I can sing it.
No.
Oh, please do.
Inchworm, inchworm, practicing your arithmetic. 1 and 1 is 2. 2 and 2 is 4. 4 and 4 is 8. 8 and 8 is 16. 16 and 16 is 32. Okay, that's a bit of the Inchworm song. And don't tempt me, because I will bring Anne Murray in next week and she will sing it for us from my recording of Inchworm. This is a real song and kids sing this thing.
How unfortunate for the Aussie children.
Well, it wasn't just the Australian children. You'd actually do it in choirs and stuff, okay? But the point I want to make is we all know that when you raise something to a power... you times it by itself. So if you're raising, like, if you're doing 6 squared, it's 6 by 6. If you're doing 6 cubed, it's 6 by 6 by 6. Everybody cool with that much?
Yeah.
Yes.
Alrighty. So, what I want you guys to do is I want you guys to open up a notepad document because I want you to write down 7 or 8 numbers in the notepad document that I'm going to give you as we work them out. And then we're going to use those numbers to do binary conversion in a minute. So I'll just open up a notepad document myself so I can do this. Okay, so we all agreed that 2 to the power of 0 is 1 because I said so. Okay, so 2 to the power of 0 is 1 because I said so.
Yep.
All right, so if we want to raise 2 to the power of 2, we have to multiply... Sorry, if we want to raise 2 to the power of 1, we have to multiply 1... 2 to the power of 1 is 2, obviously, because anything to the power of 1 is itself. So we're cool with that?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay, so the two numbers you've got written in your file at the moment, or you will have written in this file, are 0 and 1. Sorry, 0 and 2, I should say. Oh, yeah, no, you do want 1 there. Okay, now 2 to the power of 1 is 2, so we want to write 2 down there. Yep, that's right. Okay, so actually you don't need the 0. Get rid of the 0. So you've got 1 and 2 written in your file. I'm getting it together now. I've got background conversation going on here. Okay, so the two numbers we've got now is 1 and 2. Now, what is 2 times 2? Can anybody tell me what 2 times 2 is?
That would be 4.
All right, so we write 4 down. 2 times 2 is 2 squared, or 2 to the power of 2. So what is 4 by 2?
8.
No, 4 by 2 is 8. Okay, so 4 by 2 is 8. Can anybody tell me what 8 by 2 is? You are allowed to use a calculator, by the way. I won't mark you down here for using a calculator.
6.
Okay, and what is 16 by 2?
32.
Does anybody remember my inchworm song now? Is anybody having horrible flashbacks to 1 and 1 is 2, etc.? I'm not going to sing it again.
It's kind of like a stabbing pain, yeah.
Yes, okay. So basically what's happening is these powers of 2 double as they go up, right? So 2 to the power of 0 is 1. 2 to the power of 1 is 2. 2 to the power of 2 is 4. 2 to the power of 3 is 8. 2 to the power of 4 is 16. 32 is 2 to the power of 5. 64, which is what 32 times 2 is 2 to the power of 6. And 2 to the power of 7 is 128. So, the numbers you need in your file, and you can put them into a table at some point with the 2 to the power ofs if you really want them, is 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, 128. Now, if you think you've seen this concept in exponential growth and cell division, you would be 100% correct, because the cells divide in half and you get double the number of bits and pieces. But has everybody got... any questions so far? No, we don't yet. So, everybody has a table of powers of 2. We have 2 to the power of 0 is 1, 2 to the power of 1 is 2, 2 to the power of 2 is 4, 2 to the power of 3 is 8, 16, 32, 64, 128. Has everybody got those numbers scribbled down somewhere, or at least some idea of what they approximately look like?
Yeah. Yes, got it.
All right. Now, the way binary works is binary basically has... hang on a second, guys. Eagle Server is sitting in that broken PC. If you can power that PC up and eject it, there's a CD in there, but I probably would do it another time. Yeah, because I actually need to reformat the partitions to do Eagle Server. That is relevant to you guys. You guys will be using Eagle Server at some point. We'll get that amazing eagleserver.example.com thing up and happening. All right, so... binary is switches that are either on or off, or ones and zeros. So we have two states. We have yes and no, and it wasn't until females came along that we had the maybe gate. But in our world, there's a yes and there's a no. I just got a squawk out of my wife, which was what I was after. So 0 and 1 are your yes and your no. So we're cool with that much so far?
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, basically what binary says is if you pick the correct powers of 2 and you add those powers of 2 up, you can get any number between 1 and 255. So if you actually were to add 128, 64, 32, 16, 8, 4, 2, and 1 together, take my word for it, you'd get to 255. But I'm going to explain how you convert various numbers into binary and how you convert those numbers back again. But any number that can represent... any whole number can be represented by a combination of these powers of 2. Has anybody ever seen dip switches on a circuit board?
Oh, yes.
It's been a while, but yes.
So, what you end up with is a situation where you set, like, switches 1, 3, and 7 to set, like, 9600 baud, and then switch 8 tells it whether it's going to be hardware flow control or not, and all this other stuff. They're basically just lines that get open and closed on a circuit board and tell the device how to behave depending on how the dip switches are set. And they're a simple form of binary. Now, to convert a number from decimal to binary, what we need to do is figure out which powers of 2 are going to be you basically have to figure out which powers of 2 actually add together to actually get the number that you want. So let's work an example and show you guys how to convert one number in from binary into decimal. Now, if you guys are studying discovery, you get to do this with Windows Calculator. You get to kick Windows Calculator into scientific view, and you get to convert this by doing that in the calculator. But I've got some bad news for you. You're not allowed to take a calculator into any of the Cisco exams. So if any of you guys have any aspirations of sitting the entry-level network technician or the, pardon me, CCNA itself, you are not allowed to take a calculator into the exams. So what I'm going to genuinely ask you guys to do is use the calculator if you need to for the adding up of powers of 2 until you get used to it. But try and wean yourself off the calculator, because when you go in to sit the actual Cisco exams, you're not allowed to take a calculator in with you. You are allowed to have scribble paper and somebody to write on it and read the stuff back to you, but you are not allowed to take the calculator in.
Will it let you take a braille writer in? Do you know?
Not yet, no. Are we losing 3 of them, are we?
Yeah.
Oh, that'll be right.
We only have 15 and,
Okay. Okay. Now, so basically what you end up with is you need to figure out which powers of 2 are going to add together to give you the number you want. Now, this is my method of doing it. If anybody else has a different method they'd like to teach, I'd be happy to hear from you. But let's say we want to convert the number 15 into binary. Okay? So the decimal number 15, we're going to convert into binary. So everybody got the number 15 kind of in their head?
Yeah.
Now, we need to find the largest power of 2 that can be subtracted from 15. Does anybody know what that power of 2 might be? I do already, but then again, I've been doing this for a while.
Is it 8?
It certainly is. You get a virtual lollipop. So, we write down a 1 in our working, because we've subtracted 8 off 15. If we subtract 8 off 15, we are left with... anybody tell me?
7.
Yeah, everybody else happy with that? 15 minus 8 is 7? I certainly agree with that. Alright, can somebody tell me, somebody other than David tell me what's the next largest power of 2 we can subtract off our 7? What would be the next largest one we could subtract off?
4.
That is correct. 4. So we put another 1 down. So we've got 1, 1. Now, if we subtract 4 from 7, We have three left. What's the next largest power of two we can subtract off our three?
Two.
Alright, so we're going to subtract two off, so we put a one down. And we can then take the remaining one off our one that we have left, so I put another one down.
Ah, so we have so 1111.
That is correct. Now, if you look at 1111 and you work from the right, if you look at the right-hand one is worth 1, so we say 1 plus. The next one is worth 2, so we say 1 plus 2 is 3. The next one across is worth 4, so 3 plus 4 is 7. And then the next one across is worth 8, so we say 7 plus 8 is 15. Anybody vaguely follow that?
Yeah, I think so, but when you were adding it the other direction, you started from the right and not the left, is that correct? Because I wrote the table the other direction. We started at 0 and went up to 128 from left to right.
It's like the 10 system except by 2s, right?
That is correct, except that's it. It's just like 2s. So basically what you end up with is... The reason I started from the right and worked my way to the left was 1248 was it doesn't matter how long the binary number is, so you're not left counting digits to find out what the power of 2 is worth. If you work from the left to the right, you've got to count how many digits are and then figure out which power of 2 you're going to start adding up. So you'd have to count 1, 2, 3, 4. 2 to the power of 4 minus 1 is that one, so my left-hand digit is an 8, which just makes it a little bit harder.
No, that makes perfect sense when you compare it to base 10, but in that case, for me, just my way of thinking, it's more helpful for me to have the table in the other direction then, because then it matches up, but maybe that's just my limited brain.
I wouldn't say that. I think as you get used to it, the things sort of fall into place, but basically what happens is when you're converting a number from decimal to binary, okay... let's do another one that isn't quite as easy as 15. I know, you'll all really dislike me by the end of this lecture, but that's okay. I can deal with that. Or maybe you won't. Maybe we'll all be a little bit wiser. Let's take the number 30. We want to convert the number 30 into binary. All right. So can somebody tell me what's the biggest power of 2 we can subtract off 30?
60.
Absolutely. So let's put a 1 down. So 30 minus 16 is 14, if I work it out correctly. You can use your calculator for the subtractions if you want, but 30 minus 16 is 14?
Yeah. No, that'd be
14
minus 8.
Yep, so we can take 8 off that, and we can put a 1 down. So we've got 1 in our binary working for a 16 and an 8. And in fact, there is a shortcut we could take here, but I'm not going to do it. So we take the 8 off, and we take 14 minus 8, and we are left with 6, if I'm correct. 14 minus 8 is 6. We're happy with that?
Yes.
Yep. Alrighty. Now, we can take 4 off the 6. Is everybody happy with that? We can take 4 off the 6 because that's the next biggest power of 2 we can take off. So we've taken off 16, 8, and 4 now. So we're going to take 4 off the 6. And we're left with 2. Is everybody with me here? We're left with 2 if we take 4 off 6.
Yep.
So we put another 1 down. And then we have discovered that we cannot take any more off our 2 because we have 0 left. Therefore, we need to put a 0 down for the last digit because we can't take the 1 off. So what we end up with is we end up with 11110.
Sorry, Kerry, can you just run through that one more time? I think I lost you there at the end.
Okay, so we've got the number 30. We take off 16, and we write a 1. We are left with 14. We take off 8, and we write another 1. We are left with 6. We take off 4, and we are left with 2, and we write another 1. We take off 2, and we are left with 0, so we write a 1, and then we cannot take off 1, therefore we have to write a 0.
Okay, got it.
For every power of 2 you can subtract from a number, you write a 1. For any power of 2 that you do not subtract from a number, you write a 0. That is the rule. So if we take a number like 23, okay, we can take 16 off 23, so we write a 1, and we are left with 7 left. Everybody cool with that so far?
Yeah.
Can we take an 8 from 7?
No.
Without going negative?
No.
Okay, so what do we write?
A 0.
Yes, absolutely correct. Can we take a 4 from 7?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, we can. So I'm going to put a 1. Can we take a 2 from 3, because 7 minus 4 is 3.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So we write a 1. Can we take a 1 from 1? We certainly can, so I'm going to write a 1. So we are left with 1011. Yes, that's correct. I put an extra 0 on mine because I'm silly. Yes, that's correct. 1011. Now, some slightly bad news for you guys. In the extras folder under your labs folder, there are binary exercises I want you guys to have a look at, and I want those looked at by module 6. Okay, so you've got like 3 or 4 weeks to look at them and work through them and ask me questions.
Sorry, that was what? Under labs, then extras? Is that what you said?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
Now, I don't expect anybody not to have any problems with this, because obviously it's a brand new concept. And I'm quite happy to answer any questions that may come up, either by email, by Skype, next lecture. But that is the basic way you convert decimal to binary. You find the biggest power of 2s you can subtract from the number. You write down a 1 for any of the powers of 2 you can subtract, and 0 for any of the powers of 2 you can't subtract until you have nothing left over.
So then you have to go through all of them, right? So let's say you started, like in this case, at 16. You then have to try 8 and get a 0. You then have to try 4 and so on, like that.
Well, if you know that the number is less than the next power of 2 that you're going to subtract, you don't have to subtract it because you know you can't, so you just write a 0. So say, for example, we had... I'm just trying to think. If you had, say, 1001... you would see that you've got, if we look from the right, you've got 1, you've got no 2s, no 4s, no 8s, and you've got a 16. So your answer would actually be 17. So if you look at 17, you can take 16 from 17, and you're left with 1. You know for a fact that 4 isn't going to come off, 8 is not going to come off, and 2 is not going to come off, so you're going to have to write 1001. Because you can't subtract those powers of 2.
Oh.
Has anybody got any questions? Or is it all just shell shock at the moment because it's all new?
A little bit, but I think it makes sense.
So, Carrie, Jason, so if you go into the exam and you're not allowed to bring any scratch paper in, like even a Braille writer or a slate or something, that's going to make it sort of difficult, no?
We're lobbying for Perkins Braillers to come into the exams. We don't know whether we've been successful in that. We may be able to push for a slate, which is certainly manual. Did we find out how we went with that, Ian?
Sorry.
the lobbying to get like either a Perkins Brailler or a slate into the exam. Were we ever successful with that, or did anybody chase it? So I think we need to lobby for a slate, for them to provide a slate. No one writes on slates. But we can't expect every testing centre to have a Perkins Brailler either. Something worth considering anyway. Because they're making the point that if we can't bring anything to write in, it disadvantages us. Like, we can't bring a Perkins Brailler or whatever in.
A lot of testing centres are like that, though. I know with Prometric, they're exactly the same. You're not allowed to take anything to take notes or anything at all.
I think you should get a pegboard and / or a Braille writer.
Yeah, well, I think children should be living in poverty.
No, at least in the U.S., my understanding is they have no choice. If they allow a sighted person to have a blank piece of paper and a pencil, they have to allow you to use the equivalent.
Yeah, they don't really have much choice. If you fought for it, you would win that argument.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, no one would try to bring an electronic device, but something mechanical, it's pencil and paper equivalent. There's no question. They have no option.
I was actually speaking to somebody at a Prometric testing center, and she did the security and did the monitoring, and she said, yeah, I would let you bring a Brailler and paper with you, and I would just look at the paper and feel it and check out your Brailler, and that would be no problem.
How common sense.
That's curious, because Prometric here in the UK do not allow that there, certainly for the Microsoft exams.
Yeah, and in fact, you're not allowed to bring anything in. You are actually provided pens and paper by them. No. Because we all know that subnetting is a perfect, you know, you make a subnet calculator out of a bottle of water. I mean, especially if you're MacGyver.
Nah, I'd show up with one and be like, look, you can have a look. You can check this out completely. I'm not cheating. See this, you know, have a good look, feel, look inside of this. There's a microscope. Do whatever you got to do. But
well, in all seriousness, is Ian still here? No. Yeah, I was just going to say, Ian, I would. That's something I would raise with Aubrey when they get certified as testing centers. What? Sorry,
yeah, I think it might depend.
Yeah. No, sorry, I was talking. Okay, that's all right. Okay, sorry, I'm back with you. I don't know, it'll be an interesting precedent, and, I mean, you do run the risk that if you bring something in that they don't like, they will deny you the ability to take the test until it's resolved. And that could be certainly a challenge.
No, I think the trick would be, you know, before you take the test, you know, figure out who your local testing center is, call them, go down there, talk to them, you know, get, you know, form a relationship.
Bring your Brailler with them. Bring your Brailler with you and show them what it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But I can certainly guarantee that you can't take a calculator in, and you can't take anything electronic in. So, most of the people I've met who've actually sat the certified Cisco exams with a vision impairment haven't taken anything in. But they are certainly certified geeks. Okay, no worries. See you, David. All right. Any other questions before we get on to the other bits of lecture?
Just a quick question, Corey. While you guys were talking about that issue, I was trying to convert, just for fun, the number 40, which I got mostly right. I worked it out to 101, but then I guess you put the other three zeros in front of it because you can't divide it down any further because of the 8 being the last number that you can divide or subtract off of it.
That is correct. You cannot subtract 4, you cannot subtract 2, you cannot subtract 1, so you put 000 on the end.
Okay.
Did you guys end up finding more monitor cables? Or were they missing their cables? Grace? Suman, did you find more cables, or did we only actually have one cable with them? Okay. No worries. Alright, we just got given 12 LCD monitors, so that's somewhat exciting. Okay, any other questions on that stuff, or have we had enough of the binary for this week? We have done an hour on it, so that's probably, or half an hour on it, that's probably enough for right now.
I'll try a few later, and that'll be the proof if I got it or not, right?
Yeah, basically to check your answers, what you do is you can feed them back into Windows Calculator, which is the quick way to check them, but to actually check them, you work from right to left and add together the powers of 2 wherever there's a 1. So if there's a 1 at the right-hand side, you're adding 1. Then if there's no 1 for the next digit, you're not adding anything. Then if there's a 1 for the next digit, you're adding a 4, and so on. And you add the powers of 2, and you should get the number back that you were converting. So in Corey's example of 40, the powers of 2 that would be set to 1 would be 32 and 8. So you would be able to add those two numbers together to get 40.
Okay, and in the calculator, if I put in my, I'll calculate the binary result manually, and then if I just want to type in the binary and convert back, what's the key press on the calculator to convert?
You go into programmer mode, and then I think it's F8 or something. It's all in the menus.
Okay, fair enough. Thanks for that. I'll practice later.
There is a difference between the calculator. The calculator under Windows XP you put into scientific mode, and the calculator under Windows 7 you put into programmer mode. And I think that's also true for Vista. Alrighty, now does anybody have vague memories of the OSI reference model I went through last week? That 7-layered model that we all talked about?
The cake.
The sponge cake. Sponge cake.
Please never throw sausage pizza away, wasn't it?
Please do not throw sausage pizza away. Does anybody want to have a go at telling me what some of the layers were? Does anybody know any of them? And sausage and pizza aren't correct answers.
Physical, network.
Alright, we have physical and network from Barry. Anybody know of any others?
There's data link between those.
Data link.
Yep.
Application.
An application layer up the top.
Transport network.
Yep, transport. Yep, and then we've got two more.
Session just above transport.
Yes. And one more.
Application.
No, we've already got that one. I'll give you a clue. You kind of get them for Christmas. Well,
presentation.
Cryptic clue. Presentation! There we go. Presents. You create presents for Christmas. So we have physical, data link, network, transport, session, presentation, and application are the 7 layers of the OSI reference model. We would like you all to learn that by about module 7. Okay? Physical, data link, network, transport, session, presentation, application. I don't care if you're sitting in the smallest room in the house. Try and learn those layers and the order that they go in. Or you can go down the other way. Application, presentation, session, transport, network, data link, and physical. But eventually, we're going to learn all of those layers. And these chapters actually take you through what the layers do as we work our way down through the OSI reference model. Basically, the application layer is the layer that all of the applications talk to. So your email program talks to the application layer, which then talks to the various other layers that is responsible for processing your data. The presentation layer has three primary functions. Coding and conversion of application layer to make sure that the data is in the right format. To make sure that you can actually process it on the destination device. Classic example of this is Base64 encoding. Has anybody ever noticed that when you attach something to an email message, the attachment gets 25% bigger than what it was when you attached it?
No, but I'll be watching now.
Yeah, so basically if your mail system has an attachment limit of 20 meg, you can't actually attach a 20 meg file you can attach a file that is 16 meg in size, because once it goes through the base 64 encoding, it actually becomes 20 meg in size.
Overhead.
That's the one. Okay, you've got encryption and decryption, which happens in the presentation layer, and that's pretty obvious. If you get encrypted data in, you're not going to be able to read it. Okay, now some of the examples of protocols that might use the application layer would be DNS, which does your name resolution, HTTP, which does your web stuff, SMTP, which does your email. Telnet is a thing that lets you connect into other machines, which some of you may have used on the remote bundle. And FTP is the one that lets you transfer files. Now, from what I remember of Chapter 3 is it didn't really have that much in it. That was essentially what my notes pulled out of Chapter 3. That is the notes for Chapter 3. Once we get into Chapter 4, we start getting into the transport layer and stuff. But I think what I'd prefer you guys to do this week is to actually look at the binary stuff and the binary exercises, and see if you can read back over that stuff in Chapter 2 that dealt with the OSI reference model. Is there anything else that people specifically want covered this lesson?
Anything regarding the Module 3 labs that would be helpful for us to know? I have not even looked at them yet.
That makes two of us. I will have a look and see if anything springs to mind. I don't remember having to do too much modification to those.
Yeah, these are the ones that you're having to configure a web server and do some stuff with email packet capture and stuff like that.
Yeah, they've all been modified to work with the remote bundle and the Linux machines.
Ah, so this will be my first hands-on with the remote bundle. Sounds like fun.
Yeah, is there anything we should... I know you said to make sure you disconnect from it and so on, but is there anything I should know before I delve into that?
The commands that you need are actually given in the lab, so you're told how to super user, you're told which commands to run, you're told how to redirect them into a file, you're told them how to view the file. It's all pretty much follow the bouncing ball. Basically, to log out, you basically keep typing in exit until you drop back to the serial switch, and then you do a slash X. If you don't log yourself out, bad things aren't going to happen. It just means that the next student that connects to that particular port you had open will have an open login session.
Oh, okay.
And you just choose one of the three pods to work on this stuff, and then you asked us to be logged into the corresponding room on Ventrilo?
Yeah, and pod 3 is actually the switch pod, so I might get that channel renamed later today. So it's called pod 3. But that way you can tell if other students are working on the same pod as you. You should only need one of the workstations on the pod, so two of you can share a pod, but you just have to be aware that you're not going to step on each other, because the serial switch won't let you connect two people to the same box at the same time.
So, does it matter which one you connect to?
Nope, they're both the same as far as these labs are concerned. Pod 1, Pod 2, and Pod 3 both have two different workstations. And the workstations are pretty much identically the same virtual image.
Okay, and the serial switch, just to make sure I understand, basically has a Ethernet port for us to remote into on one side, and has that serial cable that goes to the particular routers from there.
Yeah, there are 16 serial ports on the other side of it, and there are devices connected into 13 or 14 of those ports. Three switches, three routers, six workstations, and there is an administrative control port.
Okay, so when you connect to that, you first connect to the serial switch, then you're designating to connect to, say, one of the routers, and then you would connect to one of the workstations through that?
No. What you do is when you first connect to the serial switch, you must put in a password, which decides which subset of ports you get access to. Pod 1, Pod 2, or Pod 3. Once you put in the password for Pod 1, Pod 2, or Pod 3, you are given a list of ports that is connected to that pod. So for Pod 1, you get router 1, switch 1, workstations 1 and 2. And you simply go /C and the number to connect to the specific workstation.
Okay, I know you demonstrated that last week, but it makes more sense when I think through it directly when I think about myself doing it.
The other thing is I believe there's a maximum of 4 people on the remote bundle at once. You can only have 4 connections into the Telnet interface, so you guys will just have to timeshare a bit and try not to step on each other's toes too much. The other lab in 3.4.3 is, I think it's 3.4.3, involves you using Sound Recorder. If you are running Windows XP and the buttons in your Sound Recorder are not labeled, grab the JGF and that will label all of the buttons for you. It's not required for everybody to use Sound Recorder. You can use any other audio editing tool of your choice. It's just that Sound Recorder exists on every Windows box, which is why the lab uses it.
Okay.
And for exams, Kerry, I've put that in my subconscious and forgotten about it. Is Module 2 the first one there's an exam that we should be taking or asking about taking?
Yes, if you don't, if nobody's asked me to activate the exams, so I haven't. But if people would like me to put the exams up after lecture, they will go up for a week after lecture.
Yeah, I'd like that, Jason.
Yep. The exams are on cisco.netacad.net. You will need to log in with those Netacad credentials that you guys set up, and you guys get to take the Module 2 exam, and if you feel comfortable, the Module 3 exam. If you do really badly on your exam and you have no idea what you got wrong, you can get in touch with me and I will go through it with you. However, if you email yourself the personal feedback and it makes sense, you can take it a second time once you want to, and if you don't get it right the second time, then I'll certainly go through what you got wrong with you and what you got wrong in the exam.
Now, you have to do it in one sitting, right? You can't stop it and start it?
Yeah, you cannot stop and start an exam. If you close the browser and you're out for more than 15 minutes, they'll see it as an incomplete attempt, and then I have to manually re-enable it.
So based on the reading and the lecture material to this point, would you say that we should be able to take both exams for 2 and 3?
I would say so. To be honest with you, you don't actually need any of my lecture material. My lecture material is just to clarify things for you. Everything you need to pass those exams is in the notes. The lecture material may make the notes more understandable, however.
Oh, yeah, tremendously so.
Well, that's the intended outcome, but I am making the point that you can actually do this course completely without lectures, if you understand enough of the notes, but it's not really recommended. Alrighty, anything else outstanding for today's lecture? I don't really want to go onto the transport layer this week because I think we've had enough with binary and the other stuff that I've covered.
Did you say there are binary exercises that we're supposed to take a look at?
Yeah, they're under extras. Your password is student. It's student.
Oh, I just wanted to share this with everyone, and I'll put it in chat, but it's pretty funny. I asked my friend, who's been doing some of this, put me onto Kavi, actually, but I asked him, what's a good way to remember the OSI layers? He said, please do not throw the spinach pizza away, is the phrase he used.
Okay, so is he perhaps more vegetarian-minded and perhaps doesn't like sausage pizza?
I guess so. I might substitute it with sausage because I'm more meaty. either, but yeah, that would make sense.
The other one I saw was Australia Post. Australia Post sucks. They never deliver parcels. So whatever suits people to remember the OSI reference model. Whatever sticks in your head.
I like both, and you can learn it in both directions.
That's exactly right.